Just how tumultuous have the past 100 years since the abolition of the Khilafah been? In a nutshell, the Muslim world has seen waves upon waves of tragedy and crises. At the same time, it is myopic to ignore the ease and awakening that has come with these difficulties. The tremors that shook the Muslim world after 1924 meant that former citizens of a Khilafah now had to digest cataclysmic changes to the configuration of the world and their concept of identity. There were now lines, flags, and passports where there were none. Even the holiest of places in Islam now by name took on a narrow tribal identity. And with these unnatural configurations, naturally came conflict.
Imaginary lines between people of the same background, same religion, same ethnicity. And now what happens? We are all at war with one another. كُلُّ حِزْبٍ بِمَا لَدَيْهِمْ فَرِحُونَ This person hates that person. This person is bombing the other person. And we have the same God and the same heritage and the same religion and the same Qibla. The concept of nation state was brought in by outsiders and then handed to us. And now all of us, we are caught up in that wave as well.
A lot of these border disputes, the deliberately vague borders, we know this in the Indian subcontinent all too well, whether it's the issues of Kashmir, whether it's the issues of the Durant line bordering between Pakistan and Afghanistan, these things all throughout the Middle East, disputes over water, disputes over oil, these things will keep going on largely because these are all artificial constructs.
The discovery of the world's largest easily accessible crude oil deposits led to an influx of Western oil companies that dominated the Middle East's economies until the 1970s and making the emirs of the oil states immensely rich, enabling them to consolidate their hold on power and giving them a stake in preserving Western hegemony in the region. The British role in facilitating the handover of Palestine to the Zionist movement bore its bitter fruit, first through tensions that boiled over due to rapid Zionist settlement and expansionism. The British played a role of midwife for the creation of the State of Israel, and the Zionists ultimately emerged from the shadows of the British to create a nation on the usurped land of Palestinians through a campaign of terror, ethnic cleansing, and creation of the region's oldest refugee problem. The lot of the Palestinians became one of Nakba, or catastrophe, then and even now.
The third negative of the collapse of the Khilafah, and it is indeed a painful negative, was that it paved the way for the loss of Palestine and the brutal occupation of that region by the only remaining apartheid regime in the world today. The Sykes-Picot Agreement and then the Balfour Declaration were both instrumental in the destruction and the displacement of our Palestinian brothers and sisters. And the substitution of local residents of that land, residents that had lived there for 2,000 years, since before the coming of Jesus Christ, the same people lived there. Their fates might have changed, but it's that ethnicity. But because of the collapse of the Khilafah and World War I and the Sykes-Picot Agreement and the Balfour Declaration, those people that lived there for thousands of years were shepherded into refugee camps, bombed and killed, and then immigrants brought in from Russia, from Europe. Immigrants that spoke a different language, had a different background, belonged to a different faith. And then this country came, which is the only apartheid country that still remains alive to this day. And this is because, once again, of the collapse of the Khilafah.
In a similar period emerged another fault line, this time from the partition in the Indian subcontinent. The emergence of India and Pakistan displaced between 10 and 20 million people along religious lines, creating an overwhelming refugee crisis in the newly constituted dominions. There was large-scale violence, with estimates of loss of life accompanying or preceding the partition disputed and varying between several hundred thousand and 2 million. Like the Sykes-Picot and Balfour Declaration, which tore apart the Middle East, British duplicity also planted the seeds for conflict in Kashmir. In the wake of the partition, Kashmiris were denied their right to self-determination, and this paradise on earth has since seen rivers of blood shed and an Indian occupation that had transformed it into the most militarized zone on earth. Following World War II, more and more Muslim nations gained independence from European powers. At the same time, neither did foreign interference stop, nor was the will of the people upheld. Military coups became a common occurrence. Ba'athist and virulent Arab nationalist ideologies raised their head.
This is the date when Rasulullah's hadith then came true, when he said, after the hereditary rule, there will be mulkan jabriyan, there will be a biting oppression. There will be a tyrannical, oppressive rule. And this is what the whole of the Muslim and the non-Muslim world is living under since that time.
Arab armies experienced major humiliation at the hands of Israel in the Six-Day War. Masjid al-Aqsa and al-Quds was formally lost to Zionist occupation. There were yet more waves of refugees, and an arson attack on Masjid al-Aqsa underscored the great peril that now confronted the first Qibla of the Muslims.
كان من أهم ما أتت عليه النيران المتصاعدة منبر صلاح الدين ومحراب زكريا والمحراب الرئيس للمسجد إضافة إلى جدران المسجد ونوافذه وأثاثه.
At the same time, the crisis prompted a show of unity from Muslim countries and the organization of the Islamic Conference, later to be known as the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, emerged. From the West, the awakening of Malik al-Shabazz inspired the Muslim world.
My going to Mecca and going into the Muslim world, into the African world, and being recognized and accepted as a Muslim and as a brother may solve the problem for me personally. But I personally feel that my personal problem is never solved as long as the problem is not solved for all of our people.
There was yet another violent partition in the Indian subcontinent, this time leading to the creation of Bangladesh. Arabs showed sign of promise in the 1973 war against Israel. Oil was leveraged as a weapon to assist the cause of the Ummah.
إِنَّ الْقُدْسِ الشَّرِيفِ يُنَادِيكُمْ وَيَسْتَغِيثُ بُكُمْ أَيُّهَا الْإِخْوَةِ لِتُنْقِذُوهُ
Conversely, there was shock as the Egyptian regime signed the Camp David Accords and recognized Israel. Communists seized power in Afghanistan, soon sparking the Afghan Jihad. The Iranian Revolution occurred, and the country was declared a so-called Islamic Republic. For some, this was a great moment of awakening. However, the reality of the claim to Islamic credentials of the Republic was laid bare in the works of ulama, were underscored that no revival and glory could come to the Ummah from an ideology that undermines the very foundations of Islam and the earliest generations of Muslims. The Iran-Iraq War was a bloody affair, with hundreds of thousands of lives lost. Western powers provided weapons to both conflicting parties, and there were devastating chemical weapons attacks from the Iraqis. Lebanon became another bloodbath when Israel invaded in 1982. Salman Rushdie published his blasphemous satanic verses. The Soviet Union was humiliated in Afghanistan. An internal Afghan struggle, however, soon took hold from the ashes of the valiant jihad. Palestinians rose in the First Intifada in 1987. Iraq invaded Kuwait. In the Gulf War, a coalition of United States-led forces attacked Iraq. US-backed economic sanctions were imposed on Iraq. The sanctions killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children and were widely blamed for the subsequent dramatic increases in famine, birth defects, and infant mortality amongst Iraqis.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children that died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but the price, we think the price is worth it.
An Islamic party rose to power through democratic means in Algeria but was violently ousted. In India, the Babri Masjid was destroyed by Hindu extremists. The Oslo Accords purportedly sought to achieve peace between Israel and the Palestinians, but only gave rise to internal betrayal of the Palestinian cause, more settlements, and a bottling up of Palestinian frustrations. Muslims suffered a genocide in Europe with events in Bosnia and the Srebrenica massacre. In 1996, the Taliban consolidated control of Afghanistan and declared an Islamic emirate. There were successive Russian assaults against Chechnya and a spirited resistance and jihad from the Chechens. Terrorism and the names of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda became buzzwords. Quite often the term terror was employed by mainstream media in Western and lackey powers to undermine legitimate resistance against occupation and injustices. In defense of Masjid al-Aqsa, another popular Palestinian uprising emerged in the year 2000.
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
Post-2000, the Muslim world could be said to be characterized by two major events. The first were the occurrences of September the 11th, officially blamed on Al-Qaeda, but considered by many to have the elements of a false flag attack. A so-called war on terror is announced and Afghanistan is pummeled and invaded.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against Al-Qaeda terrorist training camps and military installations of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan.
The tentacles of this onslaught on Islam have implications on Muslims worldwide. New legislation is enacted. Islamic work is criminalized. Muslims are profiled on the basis of their faith. And the Gulag at Guantanamo Bay opens. Iraq is invaded next, and there are harrowing accounts that emerge from the likes of Fallujah and Abu Ghraib.
In my opinion, the loss of Baghdad, which I was a witness at that stage, was something that could tell a lot about this concept of humiliation. You should have seen Baghdad that night when this magnificent city, which is in our psychology, in our culture, in our tradition, our religion, our civilization, is the peak. When you say Baghdad, it means it is the Mecca of civilization for the Arab and Muslim world. It is the civilization that spread knowledge. It is the capital of Harun al-Rashid. Baghdad was for us something really important. I have seen Baghdad that night when the Americans occupy it. And I have seen these buildings, this magnificent Al-Mustansiriya University and the beautiful mosques of Baghdad. I have seen how grim, how dark and how humiliating that scene was when the Americans decided to bring us democracy and freedom and to destroy the regime, which was a dictatorship, and, you know, force us into a direction of so-called democracy. That was very humiliating. Very humiliating. You can never, today when I remember that moment, I feel very angry.
Ten years after the turn of the century, decades of frustration from the Middle East and North Africa boil over, and there appears to be an acknowledgement by the youth of the region of the toxic role of dictatorial regimes in the Muslim world, and that change has to come from inside out. The Arab Spring is born with promising early successes, but followed by a hostile fight back by regime hegemons in the region. Tremendous loss of life and human suffering becomes a reality in Syria and Yemen in particular.
A few days ago, there is a picture from Syria. There is a picture from Al-Yarmouk camp in Damascus. This picture is unbelievable. This picture is unbelievable that in 2014, 1435 Hijri, that the Muslims could face such a situation. When you look at this picture like I'm looking at you in this masjid, there are rows and rows and rows of people, thousands and thousands of people. Wherever you can see, there are human beings standing. There are our uncles, our brothers, our fathers, members of our family. There are our mothers and our sisters wearing the khimar and the jilbab. They are there quietly, patiently waiting. You can't see any space. There are people and people and people. And what strikes you is that the buildings around them are in rubble. The buildings have been bombed, have been destroyed. It is like an old picture from World War II. That's what it reminded me of.
In 2014, in the most prominent claim since the immediate discussions after the fall of the Uthmanis, a group calling itself the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant announced the establishment of a worldwide Khilafah. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was named its Khalif, to be known as Khalif Ibrahim, and the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant was renamed the Islamic State. The claim was roundly dismissed across the Muslim world, and the group was eventually routed, but not after sparking much debate in Muslim societies and a wave of some Muslims emigrating to join the group. While the West has featured prominently in the assault on Muslims, the East has not been exempt, with China, India and Russia also emerging as major players in the suppression of Islam. In recent decades, Islamophobia has emerged as a serious phenomena, and the malignment of Muslims has only been exacerbated by the rise of the far right. The past 100 years has no doubt been excessively tumultuous, confusing, and trying for an ummah bereft of its central authority.